Welcome to All Together Now. This is Eleanor LeCain. This week, President Trump met with President Putin of Russia in Helsinki. Their meeting was followed by a joint press conference that set the country and the world on fire. At the press conference, Trump threw U.S. intelligence agencies under the bus and took Putin's word that he didn't interfere in the U.S. 2016 elections, choosing to believe Putin over the unanimous determination of his own intelligence agencies. Many Americans were shocked at Trump's submissive behavior toward our adversary, shocked by his attacks on U.S. intelligence, and by his attempts to cast doubt on Russia's interference in the 2016 election, despite overwhelming evidence. Just last week, the special investigator Robert Mueller indicted 12 Russian military officers, describing in great detail the extensive operations they undertook to interfere in the 2016 U.S. election to help Trump win. The former CIA director, John McLaughlin, said, "We have been attacked, and the president is siding with the enemy." Another former head of the CIA, John Brennan, said Trump's behavior was, quote, "nothing short of treasonous." Jill Winehouse, who helped investigate the Watergate scandal, said, "This is worse than Nixon, who never allied with a foreign enemy of the United States. This day will be remembered like Pearl Harbor and Kristallnacht." This is a national crisis. There are at least two actions we must take. First, we need to address the dangers of having a president who is more loyal to a hostile foreign power than to the United States. And second, we must elect Democrats to Congress this November who will provide a check on this dangerous occupant in the White House. We have two guests today addressing these two vital issues. Our first guest is Jeremy Vanook, who has been analyzing U.S.-Russian relations and Trump campaign officials' connections with Russia. He will be followed by our second guest, who is training people to run for office as Democrats and to win in the election on November 6th. Up first is Jeremy Vanook, a research analyst for the Center for American Progress, the leading national think tank, where he works on the Moscow Project. Jeremy has worked previously as an editorial fellow at The Atlantic, where he wrote extensively about President Trump's conflict of interest. He was at City Year, AmeriCorps member in Boston. Originally from San Francisco, Vanook received a bachelor's degree in social studies from Harvard in 2015 with a secondary in film studies. Jeremy Vanook, welcome to All Together Now.
Thank you for having me.
So describe for our listeners what just happened in Helsinki from your point of view.
From our point of view, we saw maybe the clearest demonstration yet that there is something undeniably fishy under the surface of Trump's relationship with the Russian president, Vladimir Putin. For a long time, there's been a lot of skepticism where people try to find ways to explain Trump's odd sort of fealty to Putin and his consistent denial that Russia hacked into the 2016 election, his espousal of viewpoints that seem very similar to Putin's, often at the expense of America's allies. People have tried to find arguments other than what we consider to be the obvious truth, which is that there is some underlying misconduct, whether simply what happened in the 2016 election, that Donald Trump knows that Russia played a role in his victory, that people on his campaign were coordinating with people who were effectively agents of the Russian government to help with that meddling. Or you can go back much, much further into Donald Trump's business history and into his whole lifetime of doing deals with people with questionable connections to the Soviet government and then the Russian government and even countries close to Russia in Russia's orbit that may have corrupted him and left him vulnerable to compromise from the Russian government.
Well said. And you work on what's called the Moscow Project at the wonderful Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. Tell us, what is the Moscow Project? What are you looking at there?
We're trying to create a comprehensive picture of the Trump-Russia scandal. The project started a year, more than a year ago, when it was unclear if there was going to be a systematic investigation before first James Comey announced that there was going to be an investigation under the FBI. And then when he was fired, Robert Mueller was appointed. We try to put out all sorts of different products that we think are vital to understanding what's going on, whether it's an analysis of Vladimir Putin's foreign policy goals and where Trump fits into them, what we call Putin's payout from his meddling in the 2016 election, to a comprehensive timeline going all the way back to the beginning of Trump's relationship with Russia in the 1980s, to the most recent events, whether it's an indictment or a press conference like what President Trump had the other day, where he basically spent an hour standing next to Putin, nodding quietly as Putin said outlandish things about prosecuting Bill Browder and Michael McFaul. And, you know, again, the indictment that came out just after that, where we found out that the Russian efforts to co-opt the Republican Party may have been much broader than we knew of before.
Right. Well, I'm glad you're on the case there. And it's really amazing that Trump thinks, you know, we're that stupid. I mean, this press conference he had in Helsinki followed on the heels of the special prosecutor bringing 12 indictments against 12 Russian military officials, laying out in some detail exactly how they did interfere in the 2016 election, just with evidence beyond any dispute. And yet Trump stands up there and tries to obfuscate, tries to throw smoke on our eyes and, you know, pretends that isn't so. So it's interesting that now the question for a lot of people is maybe more of an openness, but looking at it, did Trump know about, we know, of course, Russia interfered in the election. You could list it as well as I, the hacking of emails, the pumping of millions of propaganda messages, communication between Russia and the Trump campaign, at least 10 members of Trump's circle known to communicate with Russia during the campaign. 4 members of his circle have already been indicted, and 3 of them have pled guilty. So there's no question they're guilty. The question now is, do you think there was collusion between Trump and his campaign and Russia to interfere with our presidential election and turn the election over to Trump?
Well, first off, I think it's worth putting what's happened over the last few days in slightly broader context than just the indictments that came out on Friday, because a little bit less than 2 weeks ago, we have since learned that Rod Rosenstein actually gave Trump the choice of whether the indictments were going to drop before or after his summit with Putin. This was reported recently and confirmed by CNN that he decided to have it come out, which paints the whole week. It paints his undermining of NATO at the NATO summit, his attacks on the UK government and the British Prime Minister, and then his obsequious performance at the Helsinki summit, all in a very, very damning light. But as for whether I believe that the Trump campaign colluded with the Russian government's attack, I think that the evidence has been there to support that assertion for more than a year. You know, it's been more than a year since we found out that an emissary of a Russian oligarch in Putin's inner circle sent a message to the president's son saying, "We have dirt from the Russian government as part of the Russian government's effort to support your father's campaign. And instead of alerting the FBI or alerting somebody else on the campaign to say, hey, this is crazy, I can't believe that they think we'd go for this, he responded, if it's what you say, I love it. Looped in the campaign chairman and the president's son-in-law. And then they went to the meeting, and their only complaint was that the dirt wasn't good enough. So I think from the moment that that came out, it's been difficult to convince people because people are so entrenched in skepticism. People are so entrenched in trying to find alternative explanations. But it's been staring us in the face for a long time that the Trump campaign did have an ongoing relationship with emissaries from the Russian government intended to help them defeat Hillary Clinton.
Right, exactly. And it's interesting, I had heard that from CNN that Trump decided to have the 12 indictments of the Russian military offices come out before his meeting with Helsinki and after his time with NATO there. Why do you think he made that choice of timing? Wouldn't it have been better for him to wait until after Helsinki?
I honestly don't know. I try sometimes to put myself in what Trump's mindset would have been, and it's never a very pleasant exercise.
One is enough.
Mm-hmm. But the rationale that was given in one of the articles that I read on it was that Trump thought that it would give him a better hand at Helsinki, which of course doesn't match up with what actually happened at Helsinki and what's happened since. So what I think we're seeing is that Donald Trump clearly, despite having been told for 18 months now, apparently he was told as early as the beginning of January 2017, the details of the intelligence community's understanding of Putin's, not just the attacks, but also Putin's involvement in ordering the attacks, he clearly either does not believe them or sees it as vitally important to undermine them as much as possible for the sake of his electoral future, for the sake of making sure that if Democrats retake Congress in 2018, they don't immediately move to impeach him and Republican senators don't jump on board with that movement.
Right, exactly. Well, I agree with you. I think, you know, this evidence about collusion is hiding in plain sight. To me, it's so evident when we've got so many of the members of the Trump campaign first denying that, oh, no, I never had any conversations with Russians, and then the research is done and the truth comes out, and they go, oh, well, wait, yes, I did have that meeting and that meeting and that meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And time after time, you know, if they had nothing to hide, why didn't they talk about it in the first place? To me, the evidence is overwhelming. What we already know, that there was definite communication and collaboration between Trump, his campaign, and the Russians.
Mm-hmm. And one thing that we at the Moscow Project like to point out is Donald Trump is an extraordinarily inconsistent voice when it comes to policy. He will change his position three times in a week on just about any important issue, whether it's whether the tax cuts will be deficit neutral or whether the health care bill will remove pre-existing conditions, whether he wants to scrap DACA or pass a bill of love. And yet, the one thing that he has been consistent about for the 3 years since he declared his candidacy is being completely and totally pro-Vladimir Putin. And that's a really striking thing to bear in mind because a lot of people, when they try to express skepticism or defend his actions, they say, the only reason he's doing it is because he feels that his election might be seen as illegitimate if there's proof that Russia meddled, which doesn't fit with the established pattern of fact that for years he has been saying over and over and over, it would be great if we got along with Russia. Every single time somebody has presented any evidence of Russian hacking, his first response has been to call it into question, to undermine the intelligence community. And there are a couple other issues on which he's been fairly consistent. He's been anti-trade. He has been anti-Muslim and anti-immigration. But on so many things, he wavers back and forth, calling out China and then subsidizing ZTE so that it doesn't fail, despite repeated warnings from his own government. You know, calling out Kim Jong-un over and over, saber-rattling on Twitter, and then going to a summit and talking about how great he is. But Vladimir Putin, start to finish, he has been always on his side.
Yeah, I think that's right. And this kind of first came to light about Trump carrying Russia's water. I mean, and, you know, people wonder, is Trump a knowing agent of Russia, or is he just kind of being duped and being used by Russia? But in either way, he's basically advancing Russia's agenda and Russian interests, not the U.S. interests. And it started in the campaign when they changed the Republican platform to be more to Russia's liking. You know, and you tell us, you've been doing this research, in what ways do you see that Trump is advancing Russia's agenda?
That's a great question. We recently put out a report that I mentioned it earlier. It's called Putin's Payout, and it lists what we consider to be the 10 primary ways that President Trump has supported Putin's foreign policy agenda. And I'm not going to bore you or your listeners by going through all of them, but some of the big ones, he's undermining the Western alliances that have propped up a system that has brought peace and prosperity to the West for decades. He's attacking, you know, NATO, he's attacking the European Union, he's undermining American leadership around the world and building global resentment toward the U.S., but he's also delivering on specific policy goals that Putin has. For example, he has repeatedly expressed a willingness to potentially recognize Russia's invasion of the Crimean Peninsula as legitimate. And this is something that there was massive outcry around the world, and for good reason. When it happened in 2014, it's seen as one of the worst acts of aggression that Putin has committed on the global scale. And yet, Donald Trump is basically handing Putin a victory every time he says in a closed-door meeting with other NATO leaders, well, you know, Crimeans all speak Russian, so therefore it should be a part of Russia. Or when he refuses to state categorically that he will not recognize the annexation as illegitimate, or according to a Bloomberg report just about half an hour ago, that behind closed doors, he said that he would consider recognizing it, but asked Putin not to announce it until after the summit because he was worried he would get blowback from the American press.
Wow, that's fascinating. So, you know, we see Trump advancing Russia's agenda here, and there's another piece that came out on this, which was very alarming. And this just came out yesterday about Marina Butina, who's the woman, the Russian woman, who's been named and arrested as a Russian spy in the United States and was infiltrating conservative groups, infiltrated the NRA. And we'll talk a little bit more about the NRA infiltration in a minute. But on this point, one of the emails from this known Russian agent in the U.S. was on election night where she's communicating with her handler back in Russia. And she asks, you know, about, you know, what are my orders? What are we to do? And then with Trump thinking about his cabinet and considering Mitt Romney as his Secretary of State, who apparently was the lead candidate to be Secretary of State in the new administration, that apparently Russia nixed Mitt Romney, that they thought Romney would be too tough on Russia, and that they had enough influence with Trump that they knocked Mitt Romney out of the box and they got Rex Tillerson in, who Trump didn't even really know, but Tillerson had been awarded some Medal of Honor of Freedom and Friendship from Putin and Russia years ago, was very close to Russia because of his work with Exxon Oil and the oil industry. So so we get a pro-Russian Secretary of State installed and having a hostile foreign power dictate who our Secretary of State is treasonous.
Well, I think that gets to one of your comments from earlier, which is about whether Trump sees himself as a foreign asset or a foreign agent, whether he even to a certain extent recognizes the way that he's acting pro-Russia, because that what you're citing is something that has been cited to one of the memos from Christopher Steele's dossier that was not released to the public along with the rest when BuzzFeed published it in January 2017, which stated that, as you said, Russia basically killed Mitt Romney's chances of becoming Secretary of State. But when you look at somebody like Rex Tillerson, I don't know if there's any evidence to suggest that he is, for example, a knowing agent of the Russian government. And yet, it's yet another example of Donald Trump at every turn taking the step, taking the angle that helps out the Russian government. For all we know, the extent of Rex Tillerson's involvement with Russia is what is publicly known, that he has done a bunch of deals there. They have large oil and gas reserves, and he has made a whole lot of money off of them throughout his career at Exxon, similarly to how you could argue that that's the extent of Donald Trump's relationship. But even that builds the level of compromise. It builds the level of warm glow and allegiance to Russia that is really unbecoming and really dangerous within the U.S. government, where even if the extent of that early connection, it isn't, you know, necessarily compromat, but it is every time Donald Trump thinks of Russia, he thinks of the Russian oligarch who paid him $7 million to, you know, put his name on this or that building. You know, he thinks of his relationship with the Agalarovs, who are Russian oligarchs who help out Putin with many of his biggest construction projects and also helped bring the Miss Universe pageant to Moscow. And that legitimately calls into question whether when Donald Trump thinks about Russia and whether when he was in office as Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson thinks about Russia, he thinks about what is the best step for America here, or I like Russia. I've done deals there. I've made money there. It would be great if we did things that were good for Russia, too.
Right, exactly. And you've laid out a lot of the reasons why Trump would be favorable to Russia. I mean, on top of the big one, that he owes the presidency to the Russian interference in our election, which is far more extensive than most people are aware of. And on top of it is over the years that Russia has provided so much financing to Trump. When Trump had gone bankrupt so often, the American banks weren't willing to lend to him, that that Trump went to Russia, and Russia gave loaned him the money needed for his businesses. And we got the quote from his son, Eric Trump, in 2014 saying, oh, well, we have all the funding we need out of Russia. So, you know, he's beholden and owing Russia for these and many things, including the White House itself. So there's that great New York Magazine article published just last week about will Trump be meeting with his counterpart in Helsinki or his handler, by Jonathan Chait, which raises the prospect that, you know, Trump is actually a Russian agent. I encourage people to take a look at it. When it first came out, people were like, oh, well, I have questions about the Russia-Trump ties, but I wouldn't go so far as to say he's actually an agent. But then right after this article comes out, you see, he blows up NATO, the meeting, and then he goes into Helsinki and looks like an appeaser and a puppet of Putin. So it just kind of goes, wow. But in some sense, it doesn't really matter. It's maybe a fine distinction. Is he a knowing agent, or is he just completely beholden to Putin and Russia? It's very dangerous to America, and he's acting, I think the CIA had it right. I think he's acting in a way that's treasonous and against American interests, and he should be removed. So what do we do? We got the Republicans in Congress are rolling over and playing patsy. Do you have any ideas in the Moscow project or beyond? Like, what do we do about this situation with our president so beholden to a hostile foreign power?
Well, I would say that the first thing that we as the general public who are following along with this story should do is start considering the possibility that this goes much deeper and is much worse than we expect. We've seen 18 months of drip, drip, drip of inch by inch advancing the story, sometimes with big leaps when the June 9th meeting is revealed or when Mueller indicts somebody. But it's always felt like the general conception of it is, well, it could only be a little bit further than where we are. And I think that Jonathan Chait's piece does a good job of arguing for, we need to consider the possibility that this really goes as deep as it looks like it could go, and potentially even deeper. In terms of more generally what people can do, I mean, we've seen very little action from congressional Republicans, who, of course, hold the majority in both houses of Congress, in terms of actually stepping up and holding Trump accountable. There is a bill that has already passed the Senate Judiciary Committee that would protect Mueller's investigation, in which Trump has tried to meddle on multiple occasions. We know that he has tried to fire Mueller multiple times. Mitch McConnell is holding up a bill that would protect Mueller's investigation and make sure that Donald Trump doesn't attempt to interfere with it or even fire Mueller the way that he fired James Comey. We haven't seen them push Trump to pass additional sanctions on Russia. We haven't seen them attempt to hold him accountable for basically any of his actions, not just on Russia, but for the broader corruption at the heart of his administration, which really means that the only possible solution is to put people in office who will hold him accountable and who will take the steps necessary to make sure that this vital national security issue gets resolved properly, and to make sure that we find out what the extent of Russian interference was, whether any Americans were complicit in that effort, whether Trump tried to obstruct the effort to investigate that, and maybe the most important thing, shore up American election systems for the future. Make sure that our news media understands how to properly cover Russian propaganda efforts. Make sure that state Secretary of State's offices aren't vulnerable to additional hacking that might put data on voter analytics in the hands of Russia. Or who knows, next time it could be, you know, it could be another one of America's adversaries. And make sure that our election infrastructure is sound so that the next elections are free and fair, and most importantly, free of foreign meddling and interference.
Exactly right. And there's many things Congress could do if they had a spine in there with the Republicans in charge, and they're just like completely wimping out on us. No check and balance on this authoritarian, pro-Russian, possibly, you know, Siberian candidate in there, certainly acting like one. The bill to defend Mueller is crucial. Also, the sanctions, I agree, can be tougher. And, you know, they just recently Congress zero-funded a bunch of money for election integrity, going the opposite direction. We need a full court press to investigate the integrity of American elections. And because this interference by Russia is not just 2016, it's ongoing. We've done nothing seriously to stop them from influencing the elections this year or beyond. So totally agree with you. Time to elect a new Congress. Time for everyone, all our listeners, please make sure you vote this November 6th and vote in Democrats in the U.S. House and Senate. We have to get new blood that will hold this pro-Russian authoritarian president accountable. And do you have any final word? Are you having a report out of this Moscow project? How do people find out about your work? And any closing word? We have like 30 seconds.
Yeah. If you want to follow us on Twitter at Moscow_project, or you can check out all of our work at themoscowproject.org, we have explainers and articles coming out every time there's a big development. We have op-eds, and we have extensive reports covering all of the various issues in American society, in Russia, that played into really one of the most unprecedented attacks on American democracy in the history of the United States.
That's all the time we have. Jeremy Vinook, thank you so much for being with us today and for your important work for American democracy.
Thank you for having me.